Hello, right, we are here again at the ice rink for Oxford City Stars against the ridiculously named Invicta Mustang, who I think were from Gillingham. We're here for Oxfordshire United, which is an Oxford United and an Oxford City Stars partnership going on, and I think actually we've got one of the men responsible for that partnership sat around the table, which is very exciting. We'll get to the introductions in a second. It's Andy Roberts here talking to you. A little bit later on, we're going to have some interviews. Selfie interviewed Oxford United legend John Byrne at the Northampton game, I believe it was, and some good football happening in the background while he was talking on that interview. And also, I've got a couple of interviews as well later on in the podcast with a couple of Oxford City Stars legends, and that was recorded last week when Oxford City Stars were beating Swindon by 5-2, I think. Hey, the final score was 3. So we'll have a listen to that. I mean, it's quite interesting actually, because they talk about the ice hockey rivalries between Swindon and Oxford, and Oxford and Milton Keynes as well, which is quite a big deal in ice hockey. Obviously, they're very new in football, so nobody actually has any rivalries with them at the moment. But so anyway, enough of me talking. We've got around the table. I'll let you introduce yourselves. Some right to left then.
Shane Rose,
Joe Nichols,
and Matt Organ.
And Matt Organ. Now, Joe, you're the chap who's kind of behind the Yellow Army, one of the Oxford United kind of supporters groups who are responsible for trying to get things going and trying to get a bit of atmosphere going. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So basically you've got the impossible job.
Yeah,
because
it's difficult.
It's something we've been talking about in the podcast over the last sort of two or three ones we've done, is particularly with home crowds down at the moment, how do we try and get things fired up? And I've seen a couple of suggestions about trying to get like a little section of fans up in the top corner of the Oxford Mail stand to try and get something. Do you think that's a likely opportunity?
I think trying to find the way to create a better atmosphere is difficult. I think trying to find a singer section again is difficult. I think what we have done in the last three home games is there's been a number of supporters stood together at the back of the East Stand, and we've generated a better atmosphere. I think there's been the last three home games. I mean, yesterday was a little bit more quieter, but the three home games before that, there was definitely progress. And I think it's not so much about having a proper singing section. I think it's just a group of people together who kind of lead the singing,
yeah.
And encourage other fans to sing is kind of the way forward. It would be great to have a singing section, but of course we don't own our stadium. We have problems with, you know, seats, goals in certain seats. Can we move them? Can we not? You know, we don't want to upset people. So it does present its challenges, but certainly there's things that we can do and things that we've done in the last few home games to try and improve things.
Actually, we were sitting in the South Stand upper with the rich people in the Prawn Sandwich Brigade, and actually there was a small knot of fans halfway through the first half in the South Stand upper who were actually trying to get the old come on Oxford going. They didn't get very far, to be fair, but at least they were giving it.
That's when we know we're doing a good job in the East Stand. When you see the South Stand joining, you think, okay, we're doing a good job today.
Absolutely right, and that's what needs to happen. Right, so anyway, let's talk about yesterday, because we were just talking before off air. We were talking about how, you know, whether you're a positive person or a negative person, Oxford United's got its fair share of both of those. But yesterday, again, it's, you know, a similar story with a lot of our home games this season. Give us your verdicts. Let's start at the far end, Shane, with your verdict yesterday.
Well, I thought the sort of formation I would have agreed with to begin with. I think against Northampton, when we played three at the back, I thought it was perfect, because we knew they were going to play one up front. We knew Bristol Rovers were going to play one up front and five in midfield, and I just think with Rose and Wing and two wingers, we was always going to get overrun in the midfield. And, well, I just think that was basically the problem. I think we just got overrun in midfield, and with Wright playing at left back instead of three centre-halves, I just don't think it worked, to be honest.
It was a strange one as well. We got the team sheet when it came out, and we were having a bit of a fierce debate as to exactly how we thought it was going to go. Mm. And one of our numbers said Jake Wright left back, and I said, we may as well pack up and go home.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with Jake.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, to be perfectly honest with you, now I don't care who hears me say this, I think he may well be a better left back than Tom Newey, I don't know. But he's probably more likely to get drawn inside. But I don't know. I just having people out of position is never going to do you any favours.
No.
And I actually think Michael Raines in particular needs somebody like Jake Wright beside him in the centre of defence to give him that.
There's been a long-standing debate about square pegs and round holes of Oxford United, and while they're not wanting to pick the youth team to play in their natural positions. He'd rather go for an experienced pro and play him out of position.
Yeah, Wilder's always done it, hasn't he? He's always rather play someone out of position who's more experienced than a young kid.
And we've done that a lot across the midfield as well, yeah, haven't we, yeah, this season? I mean, how many? I mean, start the first half a dozen games, we were playing four central midfielders So, Joe, what are your thoughts? Anything to add?
Just frustrating. I think the majority of fans pay the money to come to the home games, and for some fans it's a lot of money and the sacrifices have to be made to come to football, which if that's the case you want to have a team put on a good performance at home, and quite often it's not like that, and I think the way we play at home is frustrating for a lot of fans.
But the crowds are never going to go up, are they, if we keep playing like we do at home?
No, but I think one thing I will say is that again yesterday at times the fans were excellent. I mean, they're just behind the team singing, making noise every single stand. It's not just the East Stand that's singing, it's the fans that are clapping along, it's the fans that are starting songs in the South Stand or the North Stand, whatever you want. And I think credit has to go for the people that, you know, turned up yesterday and for all their home games, because it is difficult sometimes, but I think we've got a real decent bunch of fans who really do make an effort every home game.
Yeah, I mean, it's half term as well, isn't it? So I mean, so it was a reasonable turnout, I thought, because I mean take the Rovers contingent out of things, I was actually worried that we were going to be down below 5,000 again, yeah. And actually, you know, it was all right. So Matt, any thoughts to add on yesterday's game?
Well, like they said, it was bitterly disappointing, because we went into that and Bristol Rovers hadn't won an away game all season. No. We're pretty confident.
They nailed on there when somebody comes like,
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you would say usually like that always happens. A team a few years ago, I can't remember who it was. It was Gillingham, I think, wasn't it? Yeah. They had won the away game for almost a year.
And
they come, yeah, they come to Cas and think, oh, here we go. And there you go. They did win first away game for a long time.
But one thing that disappointed me, though, was like, it was obviously windy and we still just tried playing it in the air all the time.
So again, that's another debate we were having as well. David Hunt, every single time he picked the ball up, straight away,
Or even Clarkey with his sort of, when he had the ball, instead of our full backs sort of going out wide for a throw out or something, we just went narrow, and every time Clarkey just kicked out of his hands, and that's a 50-50 ball then, isn't it?
Yeah, with the wind, back, yes. They had a centre back yesterday, looked like he was about 6'7", yeah. He was winning everything in the air. We didn't learn once.
No, and the thing is, I mean, we started with a couple of strikers who are capable of winning balls in the air, and that's Dave Kitson and James Constable. But as we were discussing again off air, the pair of them constantly get, you know, badgered by the centre halves, yeah. And never really get anything out of the referee, yeah. Do they?
One thing with Kitson, I think, he's coming for criticism for the last couple of games, which I don't understand, because if you watch him, he's an excellent player who really tries hard. But he has to come deep too often. I mean, I think the last home game before yesterday, he was coming in front of the back four and picking the ball up. And I think for him, he gets frustrated. Yeah. But he's obviously a really, really decent player, and hopefully we can use him a little bit better in the next few games.
I was about to say, he gets very frustrated, you can tell on the pitch, and he comes deep to get on the ball more because he's getting frustrated up the top. But sometimes you just wish, like Wilder would say to him, stay up front, because a lot of the time we'll break forward and we've got no one in the box bar being, and you want Kitson in there because he's the one that will win you the header.
You think Kitson's got to come deep because our two centre midfielders are so deep all the time as well. Yeah. I always think with wing, he's basically a centre half most of the time.
Yeah, and I mean, that's one of the things that we were talking earlier on in the season about how Danny Rose is always going to play off Andy Wing a little bit, and because wing's deep, it brings Danny Rose back in. But to go back to Kitson as well, and we were talking about kind of the depth of squad as well, Dave Kitson is going to be commanding a reasonable fee. There's no doubt about that. And potentially that means that there's less scope to have depth, and we know we've got a very young squad. Something that we touched on again before we came on air. How do you guys would you compare the current squad that we have with let's take the squad we had last season, but let that squad fully fit? How do you reckon they compare?
Last season we had our squad last season had some quality individuals in, but they were just really injury prone and not fully fit for most of the season. Levin, Pittman, if we kept them fully fit for the whole season, you'd have fancied our chances. But this year we've got a fitter squad, more robust, so that will help. But if you said last season's squad was fully fit all season, you'd prefer that squad.
Yeah, totally agree.
When you're fully fit, Pete Levin is, you know, we're getting any side, and unfortunately, you know, he for Oxford United, and you know, he was never fully fit, and that's the issue we have. And last season, with a number of players who came to our club, they weren't fully fit, and we suffered on the pitch as a result. And I think we've obviously gone the opposite way this season. We're trying to get the fit, robust players in. But it's probably not working so well, especially at home, where, you know, Andy Wing, I admire Andy Wing, I think he's a great player, but at home, you know, when he's a battering ram, sometimes we don't need that. We need someone a little bit more creative who can get people off their seats, get the forwards getting service and putting things out to the wingers. And Yeah, frustrating, definitely.
Yeah, definitely frustrating. And I think one of the things as well with the squad we had last season, particularly the likes of Peter Levin, if he was fully fit, he wouldn't have been at Oxford United, would he? Yeah. He would have been playing at a higher level. But that, I mean, that's the way it goes. But you guys have been to, is that right in saying, all or most of the away games most as well? So for those people that listen that have only managed to get to home games and are sat here wondering how the hell we're still second in the table, talk about how we're picking up the points on the road.
I think away from home, from the very first minute, we're in the opposition's faces. We're really, you know, we kind of go for it. We're kind of set up as an away team, you know, to kind of frustrate and counter attacking. And it is actually, you know, it's not always entertaining to watch, but it is quite effective. And I think I've been quite impressed away from home, just our resilience. And sometimes you think we're not going to get the points today, but we still do. We score at the right time.
We take our chances away from home. We don't create that many clear-cut chances away from home, but we seem to take them more away from home than we do.
We set up ourselves to be really hard to beat away from home, and teams struggle to break us down, and we catch them on the break, and it does work really, really well.
Yeah, and you talk about sort of taking your chances when you get them, scoring at the right time. The right time to score yesterday was James Constable's header.
Or Potter.
I mean, yeah, Beanos was easier. I think Beano had 100 goals flashing in front of his eyes, didn't he? That's no excuse, and I don't think he would ever try and use it as an excuse either. But I mean, that ultimately, those two misses, they cost us. Because if we scored those, we would have won that game.
But it's exactly, home form is poor, and the performances are frustrating sometimes, but we do create the chances, and yesterday we could have quite easily won that game, which is even more frustrating, because it wasn't like we created no chances. You know, a couple for Beano, one for Kitson, definitely. You think, you know, one of them goes in, and it's 3 points. And I think quite often under Wilder, we play so close to the edge where we try not to get beat, and one goal will win it. But sometimes when a goal goes against us, that's the goal that wins it.
It's just one refereeing decision or one foul up from a player, and there you go.
Let's talk about refereeing decisions then, because Dave Kitson was quite vocal after the game. I haven't actually heard the... Well, I actually bring Selfie in, because Selfie sort of sat politely aside today.
Yes, I'm watching.
But come and sit in my seat.
Talk
about your interview with Dave Kitson after the game.
He was a very affable chap. he put into words quite eloquently that he felt that the referee maybe didn't favour the home side too well. And I'm actually doing a better job of actually putting it across than he did yesterday. He was very vocal, he wasn't happy, and did at times question his own commitment of playing League Two football with that type of referee. So it was a very strong call to Dave Kitson.
Because we were talking earlier in the season about what his disciplinary record is, and his disciplinary record isn't actually all that bad in his career. He has had more yellow and red cards in this season than he has in the past 3 seasons combined. And I think that speaks volumes about what he's up against in terms of refereeing and what he does and doesn't get.
I'll just throw one thing out there. Steve McLean, I thought, was a very intelligent player. A little bit lack of pace when he came down on loan to us, but I saw, as I said, an incident at Bury, and we were commentating at the time of the Big Banana, and we both looked at each other and said, Steve, you're in League Two. You get League Two referees, maybe Quarry Park referees at times. You've got to get on with it. And there is, you know, again, Dave Kitson said the same, I get battered all over the place. As soon as I give it back, I get a yellow card. I heard what you said earlier, Matty, about Dave coming deep. I concur wholeheartedly. He drops deeper and deeper to try and affect the game. He is going to get frustrated. He's playing with the League Two footballers.
Yeah, he is. Right, chaps, let's have a quick chat about it. So one of the things that people were talking about, substitutions in Chris Wilder, whether he picks the right substitutions at times. One of the ones that he did make yesterday was he brought Alfie Potter on for Ryan Williams. And I thought, of the games that I've seen, I thought that was one of Williams' most effective games. What did you guys think?
Yeah, I agree. And I think he had the left back. I think he had the better of him for the majority of the game. If he wanted to bring Potter on, I would have probably taken Rigg off, who I thought was ineffective, if you wanted to bring on another winger.
Was he playing?
Yeah.
I think Rigg beat his man once, put in a great cross for Vina, but if you're going to beat him once during the entire game, I don't know why you're staying on for 90 minutes, because you could have brought Potter on and he would have beat him more than once.
But Williams played on the left quite a lot at Wimbledon, and I thought he still played quite well there. So you think he can obviously still play on the left. If you want to put
the difficulty
on the right.
Is, whether you've got someone like Rigg, he needs a left back to support him, to overlap and to do that. And of course, with Jake Wright playing left back, it was impossible to get any support. And I think, you know, Jake Wright did his best in that position, but it, you know, I know he might be used to being a left back, but we certainly were a bit disjointed. And I think with any winger, you need a full back to be helping you out. And it's a team down the left, it's a team down the right, and I don't think we had that yesterday. So when you do, yeah, and when you do have, you know, one player kind of playing on their own on the wing without any support, it's difficult. And I think maybe Riggs been a little bit out of form recently, but give him the support and he'll do better.
So have a quick chat about, I mean, I don't know if anybody's heard latest on Alfie Potter. He's obviously stretchered off, and they stuck him straight on the old ambulance stretcher, didn't they, when they were, I don't know if there's anything, any report back. I mean, I'm presumably off to hospital as a precaution, but...
I think the last thing we heard was he was in a boot and waiting for the sweater to go down before doing it.
So that, if in case you missed it, that was Selfie saying that they put him in the boot of somebody's car. anyway, so we're waiting to see how Alfie's doing. But the last thing we need, you know, in terms of, we spoke about our squad in terms of how many young players are there out there. The last thing we need is injuries, right? Mm.
Exactly. And I think one thing that we're struggling with this season is depth in squad. I think it's great that the young players are coming through. It's great that we've got this development squad. I think it's fantastic, but also if someone gets injured, we're going to be light, and unless we can use the young players, we're going to struggle. So Alfie out, you know, even Meads out, anyone out, it's going to leave us short, and hopefully we can avoid injuries in the future.
Indeed.
I've got a quick question, actually. Sorry, it's just one that was asked to me and I found it very difficult to adequately answer this question. Callum O'Dowda is a name that's on everybody's lips as a youngster. How much support would the fans give Callum? How far would they go with Callum? If he put in a couple of dodgy performances, is it all going to be the manager's fault? Or is it going to be a case of, he's a young lad, he's a local lad, let's get him out there?
I think with, when it's youngsters and they come through your own youth ranks, I think the supporters always give them a bit more support, a bit more backing. Obviously with O'Dowda, even his first touch, he fell over the ball, didn't he, on his debut when he came on the other week.
Yeah.
And he got a round of applause for it, which I think if that was a different player, I don't think he would have got that. But I just think he deserves more of a chance than what he's got as well.
A lot of our fans saw him in the friendlies as well as Charlton, and we've all been very impressed with him, and we've all been quite shocked he hasn't been given more of a chance even off the bench. I think he came on as a sub in one of the last few home games, and he did look quite impressive. He put in a great cross for Bina, if I remember.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised he didn't come on more often, to be honest, because he does look an exciting prospect.
But Sean Wright, back in the day, came on, got murdered by the home fans, and I thought he was a really talented footballer. It's how long will fans stay? You know, remember, a tolerance factor at home at the moment, you're trying to generate massive sort of, you know, support for the boys, as quite rightly, and we should do, we all support the shirt. But how far do we go if it's a bit of a mundane performance with a youngster that's maybe struggling? You know, how far do we head? Will we stay the course? Will we go right behind him all the way?
Yeah, and I think it's an interesting point, because we all call for Callum O'Dowda to be playing and other young players to be playing, but when things are not going so well, you know, who do you blame? You know, do you blame the young player for not performing again? Do you blame the manager for putting him in? But I think at the moment we've got a kind of lack of resources where, you know, we can't afford to bring a load of players in, so the youth players either have to play or we have to bring other players in if we're going to get promoted this season. I don't honestly believe we're going to get promoted if we get more injuries, because where's the cover? But we've got some really good young players at our club, and I know for sure that the support they get will be above and beyond whatever, you know, a lot of players get, because, you know, there are players that they've been brought through, and we'll give them support. And I think as supporters, it's our job to kind of really rally them boys when they are struggling a little bit, when the confidence is a little bit low. We need to get behind them, and I think Oxford United fans will get behind the young players if they're given the chance.
And I know a lot of Oxford United supporters would much prefer that than to bring in short-term loanees. Everyone's getting very frustrated about that. So to support our young players to go in instead of short-term loanees who will only be here for a month, that would be a much preferred option.
I think as well, one of the problems with leaving, not giving somebody who everybody's talking about so much, not giving him a chance to just every so often, 20 minutes here and there, to show out for the time, all of a sudden it's the person you have it a lot with, the player who's not making the side, you know, all of a sudden, because you're not seeing him, that person is the answer to all of our problems. And I remember it, I think it was before the 2006 World Cup or something like that, we had a couple of pre-tournament friendlies, and all of a sudden Joe Cole, who wasn't getting a game, he had a couple of good pre-tournament games, and then he wasn't playing in the cup within the tournament, and we thought, if Joe Cole was playing, we'd be winning this damn thing. Do you know what I mean? So when you say
it was Craddock, when Craddock had his injuries, we kept saying when he comes back, he's going to make the big difference. Then three games later, the fans start booing him. So.
And yeah, well, that's it. And the trouble with that is that kind of heaps the expectation on Callum now. And it's almost like it's when he comes on, we're setting him up for a fall.
And I've seen Callum recently, and actually, you know, people think he's the answer, which hopefully he is. But he's a young lad, and he looks like a young lad as well. So if you're a big right back, you're going to fancy that every time. Yeah. You know, he's a young lad. He looked quite small. So it's not a case of just chucking him in, he's the answer. Given the chance when it's the right time, and that's obviously what Wilder's doing. Wilder knows maybe it's not the right time for him, maybe he's being too cautious, Wilder, I don't know. But I definitely think the support's going to be there. And, you know, this season, I think, you know, a few young players chucked in and a few wins would completely lift the place, and I think it would help us a lot.
And do you know what? I think, you know, let's talk about the wider league to it as it stands at the moment. A couple of wins, and it just needs one team to throw a couple of results together, and all of a sudden they could find themselves with a fairly healthy lead.
Yeah.
But, you know, do you think we've got it in us to do that?
With our home form and the way we play at home, I don't think we're going to run away with it. I think we're capable of being up there. I think our away form is got to continue, which is always hard for a team to do, to continue. I mean, our away form is, most teams would dream of that over a season, let alone the first few games. So sort the home form out, get that a bit better. Yeah. You know, we have got a chance. There will be someone who run away with this league. Someone will put a run of six wins together. Hopefully that's us. And you never know in football. We could win the next six, surprise everyone, and hopefully that'll happen.
That's what I like. Nice bit of positivity to end on. Very quickly before we go, Joe, do you want to quickly talk about the Yellow Army? What you're doing with the Yellow Army?
Yeah, I mean, in the summer, I've done ultimate support days in the past with the home games, away games, and we needed to push it on a little bit this season. And the Yellow Army is something which exists already. That's what the Oxford fans are called, and we thought we'd get a few people together who can kind of influence things a little bit, make things a little bit better if they can. We've done it with the Oxford City Stars, we've done it at home games, we've done it with away games, we've done it with a number of things where we've got together and thought, right, what can we do to improve things at Oxford United? And the atmosphere is one of them. The match day experience of fans, they pay a lot of money to come. As fans, we want to make it as best as possible. So we're working on a few things, and we have worked on a few things, and hopefully home games, away games, and just the general togetherness of Oxford United fans will improve.
Good stuff, glad to hear it. Right, final thought before we go. Are we going to go up, Shane?
Yes.
Automatically or playoffs?
Another day at Wembley.
Another day at Wembley, lovely joke.
I think playoffs, but I think we can do it.
And Matt?
I think playoffs, yeah, we can
good
do
stuff.
It.
Right, we're going to win the league as far as I'm concerned. That'll be nicely. Selfie, do you want to introduce your little chat that you had with John Byrne?
Yes, I'll come forward to the mic because I'm a long way away. John Byrne, what a legend. Missed his last game, had a great chat. We talked about everything to do with his time at Oxford United and his career and his Barnet. Right, we've got a real legend. I just called him one of the characters of Oxford United folklore as we sit and watch the Northampton game. That is a Division 4 shot. John Byrne.
Bouncing towards the bowlplex.
Off towards the bowlplex. I've seen the penalty from James Constable go that far before. But John Byrne's back, been entertaining the troops here, the fans, and still held in a lot of esteem, aren't you, here?
Yeah, it's really nice. Yeah, it's surprising after, you know, so many years. It's something like about getting on for 20 years. But it's always nice to come back and, you know, get a decent reception after, you know, such a length of time. Very flattering and humbling, to be honest.
But you were one of life's characters on a football field. You know, you had a little bit about you. You liked to be out there entertaining as well as playing football, didn't you?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, you sort of, as you got older, you know, you got a little bit more confident and, you know, as I say, you try to entertain, but also you've got to try and, you know, be in that team plan as well. Otherwise, your manager wouldn't have picked you week in, week out. But I think football was different in them days. We're just discussing there. You know, there's not that many characters about within football. It's totally changed now. There's a lot more fear in the game, and you know, people tend to just go about their business in more and possibly more of a black and white way.
Do you think with, you know, I've got to say the fabled word money. You know, money is in the game. You know, and one position up and down in a table can be the difference between £200,000 maybe
Do you think that is that plays heavily from the top to the bottom with chairman and managers knowing exactly their livelihoods could be on the line?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you've only got to look at this morning. I think David Weir's just got the sack at Sheffield United. He's only been there a couple of months. You know, 12 games, already lost your job. The expectation's extremely high for everybody within the game now, and, you know, that's got to come down some money, hasn't it? You know, for managers getting the sack. I mean, for instance, Paulo Di Canio obviously went about it maybe the wrong way, but, you know, people losing their jobs within months of getting them, it's getting a little bit crazy.
Talking of that, where did you start your life as a footballer? I know you came to prominence up at Sunderland. We'll talk about that in just a moment. Where was your grounding?
York City. I went there as a kid growing up in Manchester, and a scout who was working for the manager at the time, Wilf McGuinness, who was once the Manchester United manager, he had a few scouts in Manchester, and, you know, he got me up to York, and I ended up signing there, and I spent 7 years there, and then my career really, it was going probably nowhere. And then Dennis Smith, who we all know from Oxford United, came in on board as manager, and he really sort of ignited my career.
Indeed, Wilf McGuinness, substitute the name David Moyes after Ferguson, Wilf McGuinness after Samat. Not the job in the world to really follow somebody as big as that. But going on, yeah, Bootham Crescent, it all kicked off for you there, as you say, under Dennis Smith. Then you got the big move, and again off you went again.
Yeah, that's right. Well, QPR went to
was it in between?
QPR was from York.
86?
QPR was... yeah, I haven't forgot about 86.
Nobody will let you forget about 86 here, will they?
No.
Just how bad were Briggs and Shot to play against?
Oh, they were tough. You know, there were certain players when you were kicking off before a game and looking at the opposing centre-halves. I mean, Tony Adams and Martin Keown were another pair, probably in maybe a slightly different way to Briggsy and Mal Shot. But you knew when you were playing against Gary and Mal that you were in for it was going to be a really tough afternoon. You were going to have to look after yourself. You knew what was coming. But I played against lots of centre halves like that.
That was the era, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, really? You expected it. You know, you expected to get kicks, and, you know,
did that hone your skills, though, to evade it? You know, did a bit of self preservation in that?
Well, I think you had to at times. You know, there were some tough centre halves around at the time. You know, Steve Foster was always one. You know, he used to always say to Fuzz in the games, you know, he'd lump me after about 20 minutes, and I used to always say to him, well, it took a bit longer to come today, Fuzzy, you know. But you just knew that was the way the game was played at the time.
But your skills, as you say, you honed them. You went to QPR under Jim Smith, I believe it was, in those days, and in 86 he left Oxford, went to, so there's always been a little bit of an Oxford United inkling. But you came to Oxford after a very successful career, and you know, some people often look down at Oxford and think bit of an outpost, bit of a sort of pension plan, but you came down here and sort of proved your worth in a lot of ways.
Oh, look, I had a great time down here. I'd really, really, really enjoyed it. I was saying to Peter Rose Brown, it was the football side of it was great, but everyone around the club at that time, it was a joy to come into training every day. There was a great atmosphere with the lads. You know, the coaching staff were good. Dennis was there. Steve McLaren, blimey, you know, was a youth team coach. Look at him now.
I don't know why. Should we look at him now?
Well, maybe not.
We could look at him a few years ago, yeah.
No, but, you know, you understand what I'm saying. Yeah. It's like, it was just like a really tight unit. And as I say, it was a really, really good
club. Did the manor instill anything in players? Did it sort of say, look, hang on, it's not the best place in the world, you know, there's a bigger stadium around, but, you know, we're all in it together?
Possibly. There was probably that side of it. But you know, I think, like, if you come to the manor as an opposing player, it's a horrible place to play. And when I came here as playing for Oxford, you know, all that changed, because, you know, if you could get sides in the second half kicking down the hill towards London Road, you know, it was fantastic. You could really turn it on. And with some of the players we had around at that time, like your Joeys and your Chrissy Allens and Moods and, you know, Jimmy McGiltons, there was, you know, I probably could go through the whole squad, Matty Elliott, you know, there were some good players around at that side. And Mickey Lewis, there were some really, really good footballers in that squad.
Yeah, I'm glad you added Mickey in there, because most people wouldn't. He was just Mickey, wasn't he? Mad Dog.
Oh, he was, but he was a better player than probably people give him credit for. You know, he was a really good footballer. I've got to mention Anton Rogan as well. Blimey, he's my best mate.
Anton, wonderful chap. Never really loved football. I spoke to him afterwards. He sort of said, I just did it. It was just one of those things. But we're talking about yourself. You've done some crazy antics. You know the old hair would be sort of decent mullet back in the day.
Yeah.
And You had the sunglasses on the Brighton team photograph, which was a little bit of a nice touch. But the Raging Bull goal celebration, maybe not quite the sort of exuberance we've seen latterly.
No, maybe not. I mean, it was. I don't know where that ever came from. I think we contrived it in training one day, and it seemed like a really good idea at the time.
You had a great partnership with Paul Moody, didn't you? You know, there was he was a bit of a, I suppose you could call him a bit of a blunderbuss. He had a lot of skill in that big frame, didn't he? And was he a pleasure to work alongside?
Oh, he was. He was. I mean, I played with some quality strikers in my years, and you know, Moose was up there. He was perfect foil for me. I always sort of fared better when I was playing up front with someone who was a bit bigger frame than me, you know, could knock defenders about, and I'd sort of reap the benefits. So,
but you, international career as well, so you had plenty about you. You know, let's not disguise the fact that you knew where the goal was, and you knew how to get the best out of the skills that you had.
I was fortunate. You know, I did have a half decent career, you know, but I mean, if you look back on it, like someone said to me, you know, did you have a good career? I said, well, I played at Wembley 3 times, lost every one, went to a World Cup, never got a game, went to a European Championships, never got a game, played an FA Cup final, could have scored in every round, didn't. So it, a bit of a failure really when it comes to that. I'm only joking.
If that's a failure, my word, there's a lot of people listening to this saying, I wish I've failed that well. But you know, come on, you know,
that's tongue in cheek.
It is tongue in cheek. You've played at some fantastic stadiums, as you said. You've played in a lot of high quality places and tournaments around the world. How fondly do you look back at your time at Oxford?
I loved it. I'm not just saying that because I'm sat here today watching Oxford United. I was, you know, really delighted to get be asked to come back. But no, I mean, as I say, that was one of the happiest times, you know, even though it wasn't as successful on the park. But I really enjoyed the football. I really enjoyed the sort of rapport we had with the spectators. And I said, you know, everyone around the club. It was a lovely chapter to have in my football career.
Well, you were at Brighton as well, as you said. You've been at Broker Park. It's now the Stadium of Light. And, of course, it's the Kassam Stadium as opposed to the Manor Ground. Do you think these new purpose-made stadia have lost a little bit of the biting atmosphere that the Roker Roar and the London Road and everybody being close on the pitch had?
Yeah. Without a doubt, I think when you even just adding all-seater stadiums, you know, is going to take something away from that. But I mean, obviously, health and safety sort of takes forefront first. You know, I sort of go down to the Amex Stadium every other week to commentate on Brighton. I mean, it's a wonderful stadium, but you know, they just don't. Sometimes you can argue they don't have the feel of the old stadiums. But you know the
Goldstone was something else.
Yeah, that was another stadium. You know, you get a great atmosphere in there, and I'd say the Roker Park. But I suppose progress, you know, football couldn't really stay in that area. It had to move on.
That is the aren't we pleased? Yes, we are, but I'm surprised there's some fans from Northampton along by the side of us. Just going back, characters in that dressing room. A lot of people say there'll be 11 characters in the side all the time. We know that Joey isn't the most talkative, but Massey, what was he like?
No, Stu was a big character in the dressing room. There was the likes of Phil Whitehead, the keeper, Mickey Lewis, Blimey, Mickey, you know, Matty Elliott. You know, they were all different types of characters. Even Jimmy Magilton, you know, never stopped talking, Jim.
With football, now, as you say, you had success all over the place. Do you find suddenly characters just appear in change rooms and it gels, it goes along?
Yeah.
You'll go to some places that you just inherently know it's not going to work, but sometimes you just think, hang on, this is a room full of seriously big boys.
I think so, yeah. I think you've got that. You've got to have the ability on the pitch as well, though. I mean, it's all good and well having a great team spirit, but if you haven't got the players out there, you know, you're not going to get any kind of success. But yeah, you just know I've just went into that dressing room. The first day you go in, it's like sort of starting a new school for the first time. And you've got to be a little bit quiet very early on and just see how it is, not sort of enforce yourself on it straight away. Yeah, I knew as soon as I walked in that Oxford United dressing room with the people around there that it was going to be a good place to be.
Now, fabled Malcolm and Dennis, we always thought that Malcolm would be good cop and Dennis would be bad cop, but he tends to think it's the other way around. It was Malcolm that was bad cop.
I don't know about that. Who so did Mally tell you that?
No, that was Dennis.
Was it?
Yeah.
No, I'm not having that.
You're not having
that. Yeah, Dennis was. Mally was good cop.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. Dennis was the one who you didn't really want to sort of suffer his wrath. Yeah, they were a great pair to play for. You know, the managers that you go out and, you know, and sweat for, you know, you roll your sleeves up and play for them.
I spoke to Gary Parker some years ago, who was signed by Ron Atkinson, Martin O'Neill, and indeed he was signed by Brian Clough. Three big names in the world of football, and I asked him which manager he would sign if they all came in equal terms now. You know, talking about all the managers you played under, who stands head and shoulders above? Who got the best out of John Byrne?
Oh, blimey, probably Dennis, maybe, you know, because he took me everywhere he went. But I've always got like a soft spot for Jim Smith as well, and obviously Jack Charlton. You know, three managers who were just honest with you. There was no sort of games going on and that. Just honest, brutal. If you were bad, you were bad. They'd tell you. If you were great, you were great.
The last time you turned up that I can remember, actually, I think it was Joey and Dave's testimonial.
Yeah.
Twisting and turning and popping one in the back of the net down here at the open end. Still got it.
Yeah, well, yeah. It was probably in slow motion, like, but yeah, if you sort of never lose it. I mean, if someone pops a ball in front of you 8 yards out, you've got a decent chance to put it away. It's just that if you had to run 10 yards to get to it, that's where the problem is these days.
Yeah, the other question is, I think it was Gary Lineker or was it Alan Shearer said that scoring goals was better than sex, you know?
No.
I don't know so much, not a Sunday league level. What about at top level?
I mean, scoring, yeah, once you. The scoring a goal is one of the best feelings you'll ever have in football. As soon as you hit that ball and you know it's going to go past the keeper. It's a straight. You can never sort of really describe it to anyone, especially, I mean, you know, everybody's. Plays all levels of football, but to score in front of a crowd and you know, they all go crazy. Yeah, I mean,
and to know you've satisfied each and every one of them with that strike.
Yeah, you know, I mean, whether it, you know, you can compare it to having sex is we won't go down that road.
No.
Yeah, I'd rather have a cup of tea these days, but
well, mate, you're younger than me. Stop the tea. Anyway. But let's be honest. How old are you now, John?
52.
52. Right, you're looking a very good 52.
Oh, thank you.
You still playing the old charity? Still putting the boots on?
No, I've packed in the charity games now. Sort of realised it's time to call. I still enjoy running and a cycle, and I still try and keep myself fairly fit. But yeah, no, I think you've got to be, you know, you've got to realise one day that your days are up. Even playing in charity games becomes a.
You sure you're not just trying to say it hurts?
It does hurt, yeah, it does hurt, yeah. And you've got to go to work the next day now as well, so it's you can't sit in the treatment room reading the paper, having a cup of tea.
Yeah, John Burke, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. An absolute hero you were for Oxford United. And I'll just tell you one final story. I missed your last ever game. 0-0 against Bristol Rovers because my son was being born. That was about nearly 19 years ago. 0-0
right.
Draw at the Manor, and I had to sit in the maternity wing listening to the crowd oohing and aahing, and not my wife, in fairness.
Oh, blimey. Well, it all turned out all right anyway.
Cheers, John.
Cheers.
Thank you.
So I'm here with Paul Donohoe and Paul Crockett, Oxford City Stars legends. We're at the ice rink here because the City Stars are taking on Swindon Wildcats. Thank you very much. Very silly name. Appropriately silly name for Swindon. And it's currently 2-1, isn't it, I think,
yes.
to the City Stars, which is really good news. But Paul and Paul are here. They're legends, and they've come back down to see Oxford City Stars. And we thought we'd grab a bit of a chat with them and just sort of see where they're doing at the moment. I guess the first thing, that because this is going out to Oxford United fans, and as you'll be aware that we have a fantastic rivalry with Swindon. I guess the first question is, did that rivalry exist when you guys were playing ice hockey between the City Stars or in Swindon?
Yeah, just as much as in the football, I think. But a lot of the time, unfortunately for Oxford, Swindon often played in the league above us. And we only used to meet in cup games, pretty much like in the football, where they tend to be in different leagues all the time. It was much the same in the hockey. And it was few and far between, but when the games occurred, they were big rivalries and always good fun.
But there was a stage where we had a few Swindon players actually in the team, so you kind of had to get along a little bit.
A little bit.
Yeah.
But okay, just don't pass them too much, though, right? But no, I mean, it's the same thing, though, as you say, with the football. We don't get to play. We obviously played with them a couple of seasons ago in the league. But when you do get to play them so frequently, it actually makes the games all that more special, doesn't it?
Yeah, the rivalry is all that much more heightened.
Yeah.
When you meet in the rare occasions that you do. I suppose if we were meeting on a more regular basis, it would be less of an issue. But
yeah, back as a player, you always know it's going to be a good game.
Now you're both sort of Oxfordshire lads, aren't you, as well? So that's going to, you know, so you're going to have that in the back of your head. Now ice hockey is a slightly tasty sport anyway. There's the occasional scrap. Were the punch ups a little bit more often in the Swindon games?
Yeah, I remember one that sticks out in my mind. A guy called Brian Larkin that played for Swindon ended up fighting with three Oxford guys, including the goalie, at okay. one stage. So yeah, that was always good fun when the fights started.
So obviously Swindon's a big game. Are there any other? I mean, you know, you obviously there's all the other local rivalries, but quite often there are other teams that you have the rivalries. Oxford at the moment, sort of, well, in recent history, has teams like Stevenage and Crawley. Are there any big rivalries that stick out in your mind from when you used to play?
Maybe not a rivalry, but Cardiff was always a difficult game, especially in our own barn.
Because it's a big barn as well, isn't it?
But it was always a very physical game, and you always came back knowing that you played a game when you went there.
And I think distance-wise, Milton Keynes was always considered a local derby like the Swindon game. So when Milton Keynes and Oxford played in the same league, that was a big rivalry.
And now you played for Milton Keynes as well, didn't you?
Yeah.
You actually jumped up a couple of leagues to play for them as well. So
yeah, well, it was strange how it worked out because they did some restructuring of the league. So actually the season I played for Milton Keynes, Oxford and Milton Keynes ended up in the same league.
Okay.
Although Milton Keynes ran away with the league and pretty much won every game, Oxford suffered pretty much a defeat every week, unfortunately, in that season. But
did you ever beat Milton Keynes while playing for Oxford?
Yeah. In the season we won the league in 89, which was when Milton Keynes was formed. We pipped Milton Keynes to the post in the very very last game that we played.
So we've spoken a little bit about the passion of playing for Oxford, and that's one of the things that actually gets sent from a lot of the current players for the Oxford City Stars as well, because they are getting a bit of a resurgence. Obviously, they won the league last season, they're defending their title this season, there's a swell of interest behind them, and I think there's this great sense of pride that you don't get much in football anymore, of playing for your hometown.
Yeah, so it's nice being able to play for the Oxford team. Most of us have gone through the youth system. It's like I say, it's nice having the slots there to be able to play. There was a stage, like I said, with Selfie when I was talking to him, that we had quite a lot of imports in and a lot of players from other local sort of area. But like I say, with the Stars, how they've got it mixed up at the minute, they're bringing in the youth, and there's always a chance for a player to have a go.
It was difficult to start with because obviously the team was formed with players from the rest of the country, and it wasn't until a few years in to the club's development that younger players like myself started to come through, and then you started to see more and more younger players coming through. So eventually the players from the rest of the country dissipated, and it was more of an Oxford structure, so it was good.
Because I guess you've got to have a team there in the first place for people to start thinking, actually, do you know what, I fancy a bit of ice hockey. How did you guys get into it?
Well, like I said earlier in the interview, it was a case that it was a family interest. With my brother's father coming from Switzerland and already involved in ice hockey before Oxford Ice Rink was even built. So as soon as the rink was built, the interest was there, and as soon as the junior club was formed, it gave us an opportunity to get into it. So
now you guys, a bit of an overlap in your careers for Oxford. Paul and Paul, I see Paul Donohoe, you're the senior member of the two, and you actually coached Paul Junior here for a little bit.
Yeah, I did. In the early 90s, as I'd already been playing for 10 years or so, my interest lent towards the development of the youngsters coming through, and I spent a couple of seasons coaching the juniors, which Paul was part of, and Darren Elliott was another one, Andy Cox was another one, so some of the current players I coached as kids, yeah.
And did you see him as a bit of a mentor, or was he a bit of a taskmaster? Did he give you a clip round the ankles if you weren't behaving?
In hockey, it's kind of a bit of both.
Okay.
Yeah. You've kind of got to have the attitude to play in the leagues that we're playing in. And you've got to learn how to step up, basically.
So, you're out there watching. I mean, I don't know how often you guys actually manage to get down to come and watch the City Stars these days. But watching out there now, has the game changed much since you guys were playing?
There's a couple of rule changes that have taken place since we played, which make the game a little bit more open. And although it's difficult to judge from the sidelines, it does seem as though the physicality is a little bit less.
Less physical.
Oh, that's a shame.
Maybe a little bit more technical.
It looks pretty scary to me out there, to be fair.
But the technical ability, like Paul said, watching some of the kids out there, like the Oliver brothers, you know, they've got some amazing ability and great technical skill that they use. Maybe that wouldn't have been so evident in our day because they might have been knocked about.
Taken out,
a bit too much. It's developed and progressed into a more technical game maybe rather than a more physical one that we were involved in.
So who are the best players you both played with?
I would say Dan Prater, who is still around in Oxford, was one of the best imported players. A guy called Rick Smith, you remember Rick? Was an awesome player, and he came to Oxford in 1988 and was just amazing to watch. We've had some really good Canadians, some good Americans, but those two stick in my mind.
Yeah, definitely. I played with Greg Owen, who's quite good, played in Canada for a while. He's just come back and he's been playing in the top leagues.